Do you condemn the terrorist attacks carried out by Hamas on Saturday, 7th of October? If, like me, you've been following the news from Israel-Palestine closely in the past fortnight, you'll know that's the first question asked of Palestinians and their supporters in virtually every mainstream media interview. It is, of course, a deeply offensive question because it implicitly assumes there is a cloud of suspicion hanging over the interviewee that, in fact, the interviewee must prove their moral worth before one can justify proceeding with the interview. Amar Abu Shamla will get into more detail later about what this opening question says about the corporate media's coverage of the Israel-Palestine conflict and how such coverage shapes the perceptions of all too many people. But first of all, let me ask you how you feel at a personal level, being a young man of Palestinian heritage, when you watch or listen to interviews of the kind I'm describing.
Thanks so much for having me, by the way. I'd say I feel very frustrated watching them. Before being a Palestinian, to be honest, just as someone who's engaged with the issue or with any issue for interviews I watch, I feel a bit taken for granted. I think any one-sided journalism like that doesn't quite sit right with me. And it feels a bit subpar. It's not what I expect out of journalism. I expect journalism should be more impartial than that. It should be asking the hard questions from both sides and should be really trying to dig to what's at the bottom of an issue. Instead, what we've been seeing, and that question is reflective of that, is a lot of pretty sound bias, a lot of sensationalism, and a lot of bait being put out there to try and just get a nice catchy headline instead of actually trying to dissect an issue for an audience. So being Palestinian aside, when I watch those sorts of interviews, to be honest, I find them really frustrating. As a Palestinian, I feel a bit insulted watching them. And for exactly that reason that you put forward, there's this premise reflected in a question like that we as Palestinians have to start by condemning ourselves and proving ourselves before we even have the space to talk. And it's a premise that it's an obligation that seems to be exclusive to us as Palestinians. You know, when I watch interviews with Israeli spokespeople, and not just people engaged with the cause who happen to be Israeli, but official Israeli diplomats, spokespeople for the government or government officials, they're not asked to condemn anything. And so if there was a quality, to be honest, in how we were dealt with and how people on the pro-Israeli side were dealt with, if they were all asked right at the start of the interview, do you condemn the killing of 1,500 children in 2 weeks? Well, to be honest, then I would accept the question. But they're not asked that. And so there shouldn't be any obligation for me, just by virtue of being Palestinian, that I have to start by condemning myself. So in that sense, I think it's quite insulting.
Hussam Zamlot, the Palestinian ambassador of the United Kingdom, has described this incessant, obsessive, and indeed almost singular focus on Hamas and the demand to condemn its actions as a framing device designed to shape and control popular perception and understanding of the Israel-Palestine conflict. The usual pattern one sees, and one sees this over and over and over again, and not just in relation to this latest phase of the conflict, mind you, but over the course of many years, is for the interviewee to be rhetorically pinned down into a corner, forced to discuss the merits or otherwise of Hamas's terrorist strategy, often at great length, which in my mind is not an accident, all of the oxygen being taken up by this question of Hamas's terrorism, such that half or more of the interview often is devoted to this one subject and one subject alone. As we've both said, there's something not only deeply offensive, but also absurd about the use of such a framing device. One could argue it's a legitimate question to ask. In fact, I myself would say it's a legitimate question to ask of a Hamas spokesperson. But it does become a kind of theatre of the journalistic absurd when the interviewee is representing an NGO, a human rights organisation, an advocacy group, a policy think tank, a charity, and so on. Your thoughts, Amar, in terms of how these questions are being used really as a framing device to control the media narrative?
Yeah, I completely agree with him. Actually, I've watched quite a few of his interviews in the last 2 weeks, and an example of how it's misframed so heavily. So the most striking interview of his I watched was right after he lost large segments of his family in Gaza. And right off the bat, he gets asked, do you condemn Hamas? And when he gives a very clear answer, almost 2 to 3 times in a row, the interviewer tries to probe and probe and probe further. Like, are you sure you don't condemn Hamas? Are you sure? I found that insulting, and I also found that really ignorant, because he represents the Palestinian Authority, which is a rival faction to Hamas. They chose a different path 30 years ago, so it should be obvious to the interviewer what his stance is. And yet the whole interview gets consumed in all this discussion about Hamas when he represents a faction that is completely opposed to Hamas. So I agree completely with his thoughts. I think that Palestinians and all others that are engaged in our cause, we want to shed light on the reality and the history and context of what's happening. We're not Hamas spokespeople. And like you said, if someone represents Hamas, then, of course, the question is completely legitimate to put towards them, to get answers out of them about why they do what they do, and about whether they, you know, what they did sits right with them. The questions about civilian death is 100% legitimate, but that's a question for Hamas spokesperson. It's not a question for me, for example, as a young Palestinian, to defend Hamas. I've got nothing to do with them. And I think the framing around Hamas, it's a diversion away from the crux of the issue, which is occupation, dispossession of Palestinians, and a system that's now been described as apartheid by most human rights organizations.
Speaking of the crux of the issue, Amar, the great Israeli historian Ilan Pappe has written many meticulously researched scholarly books on the history of the Nakba, the catastrophe that befell the Palestinian people in 1948, when thousands of Palestinians were massacred by Israeli forces, their homes demolished, their villages destroyed, resulting in the expulsion from historic Palestine and dispossession of some 750,000 people. Pappe recently said that we, meaning those of us who support the Palestinian struggle for self-determination, cannot rely on soundbites to counter this profoundly distorted and in many cases outright fabricated narrative of historical events presented to us by large sections of the mainstream media. Instead, we require space and time to carefully and patiently explain that history. It's a big and challenging question, Amar, but how do we, and I'm including myself here as an independent journalist, set about carving out such a media space in such a way that we're afforded the opportunity to tell the true story of Palestine and its people to as large an audience as possible?
Yeah, I watched that speech actually by Ilan Pappe a few days ago. It's definitely a challenging question. I think our biggest challenge now, and I think the starting point, is actually to rehumanize Palestinians before we try and get the space to talk about history and to talk about context and the Palestinian story. The problem now is that we've been completely dehumanized. When we look at the coverage of, say, the Hamas attack on the 7th of October, it's very visceral, it's very emotional, very human stories. There have been news stories run here on some Israeli reservists flying back, and there's lots of emotion in the stories, but then Palestinians have been dehumanized just to numbers and statistics. There's no space for our stories, for our dreams, you know, for our memories. A friend of mine from Gaza actually did a 45-minute interview with the mainstream news channel. When the segment aired, it was a 7-second cut. So I think that's actually the starting point for us. But before we try and carve out space for history, we have to rehumanize ourselves, because no one's interested in our history if they've been desensitized to our humanity to begin with. How we go about doing that, it's a challenge. I think a lot of people now are starting to pursue social media as an avenue where they have a bit more agency, although we've seen recently it's not quite the level playing field that people think it is.
Speaking of humanisation and the human element of this conflict, Amar, I wanted to change focus for a moment and ask you how you've been feeling at a personal level in this past fortnight. And if you don't feel comfortable reflecting on your own personal feelings, that's perfectly understandable. It may in fact be too painful for you, but emotional sensitivities are indeed running high at the moment. There's a great deal of pain and suffering being felt, not only by Palestinians in the occupied territories, but throughout the global Palestinian diaspora as well. So if I may ask, you know, how are you coping? And perhaps most poignantly, do you have any sense of hope at the moment? Can you perceive any light, you know, any light even at all, even a shard of light amid all the darkness?
It's definitely been difficult. I think like most almost every Palestinian, I've been feeling quite stressed, not just about what's happening in Gaza, which is devastating, but even just looking at what's happening in the West Bank, and there's not a lot of coverage about what's happening there. I think there's a lot of fear about what this all means for the future. Is this going to become a new permanent reality? But there is hope. I do feel hope, and for the simple reason, to be honest, there isn't any alternative to having hope. We can't throw in the towel and just give up. And history tells me that there's reason to have hope, even if it feels very hopeless now. Ultimately, colonial projects like the Israeli occupation of Palestine, they're not sustainable. They can't but fail in the end. And things can happen in ways that we don't expect. Like, I don't think anyone during the Yom Kippur War in 1973 would have foreseen the peace treaty that followed 6 years after, but it paved the way for it. So I think the only shard of light I can see now is that at least we can take the lesson away from all of this, that Palestinians can't be forgotten. Like, our issue, our cause can't just be silently ignored. But what we need now is some level-headed leadership to actually be able to see that sign and act on it in the right way, not in the wrong way. But we don't have that at the moment, unfortunately.
Finally, Amar, we always try our best to end our interviews on a positive note. And in that vein, what would you say to those of our listeners who are understandably upset and indeed, I suspect, horrified at what they're seeing on their TV screens, at what is unfolding in Gaza? So how might they make a contribution here in Australia specifically in aid of the Palestinian cause, whether that's politically or humanitarian work or medical assistance, simply educating themselves further about the history of the conflict?
I'd say, well, to be honest, I'd echo the point I just made that we have to have hope. There's no alternative to having hope. So even if it feels hopeless, we have to choose optimism over despair. Otherwise, we're all doomed anyway. And I think there are plenty of things that we can do, especially here in Australia, where we live in a country where we have some political agency. There are lots of rallies that happen. Anyone who wants to really put out their energy can go to those rallies, and they do get noticed, and they do provide a bit of momentum. Writing to local politicians is always something that's effective. APAN actually have a template on their website that makes it very easy to send an email to your local MP. And the more emails they get, the more they have to act on things. There are plenty of good charities like the PCRF, the Palestinian Children Relief Fund, that people can donate to. And definitely educating ourselves about the cause and just doing soft advocacy, speaking to the people around us who are interested in the topic. All of these things, even though they feel small, they all collectively add up to something quite big.